Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Famitom.
Oh, Famitom.
Yeah, Famitom. I am a port of something that once existed in arcades, which is appropriate because, Josh, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about Capcom's classic Ghosts and Goblins.
Look at that cartridge.
Hey, do you know what's even weirder with Ghosts and Goblins,
what?
Tom? The fact that I have the Ghosts and Goblins toys.
Where the heck did you get those?
So these are available right now at FYE.
Interesting. All right. Well, I mean, yeah, Generation X / Elder Millennial Nostalgia is still at an all-time high. So, of course, they're baiting us with toys we couldn't get in our youth.
Yeah.
Ghosts and Goblins is notorious for its difficulty and for, being one of Capcom's oldest and longest-running franchises. And, Josh, why specifically are we bringing this up in February 2021? Ulterior motive here?
I feel like this game is coming back, and it's coming back prettier and newer and revamped, I would say. Maybe even resurrected.
But that's a brilliant marketing tagline, Josh. I don't know. You should get paid money for that one. But yes, in tandem with Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, which is going to be released on the Nintendo Switch on February 25th, we are talking about this game. And, you know, it's another one in our little bit of an ongoing series here of, did this game need a remake? We previously did it for Destroy All Humans and then for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. So now we're just asking ourselves, like, did this game need to be remade?
So, Tom, take me back to the year, I guess, 1985, maybe 1986, depending on what year you want to start.
Oh, call me Marty McFly, because just like the namesake of our podcast, I'm going back in time to 1985, where not only did we get Back to the Future, we got Ghosts and Goblins, which was an arcade game released on September 4th, 1985. And then, Josh, within a year, you know, its popularity was significant. And within a year, this was released on the NES, the Famicom in Japan on June 13th, 1986. And then the good old Nintendo Entertainment System in America on November 1st, 1986. Developed and published by Capcom, although its North American release was published by Taito America, and they're like an all-purpose publisher that handles lots of different kinds of ports and stuff. They are known primarily nowadays for the Cookin' Mama games, or they were for a time, but that's a whole other shitbag.
Yeah. This actually was one of the highest ranked, I think it's like the 8th best-selling Capcom franchise, which is weird.
It is. I was going to actually play this little game with you later, Josh, but do you want to try to guess what the seven higher franchises are? You don't have to do them in order, but I'm gonna see if you can get them. So keep going, and I'll cut you off as soon as you're wrong.
Okay.
What do you think? What do you think is the first higher grossing Capcom franchise?
Mega Man.
That's number two.
Then Resident Evil.
That's number one.
Monster Hunter.
Correct.
Street Fighter.
Yep, that is number three.
I'm trying to go through the history of Capcom right now. Oh, man. I feel like I'm blanking out on some obvious ones, too.
The one I will say, it's only obvious in that it got more popular as time went on.
I think I'm gonna tap out right there.
You're gonna tap out? All right.
Yeah.
So from one down to Ghosts and Goblins at eight, the top eight Capcom best-selling franchises are Resident Evil, Mega Man, Street Fighter, Devil May Cry, Monster Hunter, Onimusha, and Dino Crisis.
Wait, there's now, only also three Dino Crisis games.
But apparently those
and
three were
they
enough.
They won't make another one, apparently. Give me a Resident Evil 2 remake of Dino Crisis, Capcom. Hear me out, okay?
Now, I just want to bear in mind that, so I assume you found this information through the same way I did my research, and the list that I'm citing was generated in 2009, so this all could have changed.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh. Do you want to know what in 2009 was right below Ghosts and Goblins in terms of all-time sales?
I want to know, yeah. Can you tell me?
Ace Attorney. And that has to be higher at this point. So
yeah.
I think this is something we're talking about. Maybe I'm generating confusion, but this is a franchise that's long running, but also like seemingly not as mega popular as you would think.
I think because, it's only like, popular because of its difficulty.
Interesting. Yeah. Like it's an iconic brand name within gaming, but also I don't feel like it's talked about that much.
But when it is talked about, what is it talked about with? The difficulty.
It's difficult.
Exactly, yes. Right? But because with this, you had Ghosts and Goblins, you had mm-hmm. Ghouls and Ghosts, you had Super Ghouls mm-hmm. and Ghosts, mm-hmm. You had, I think, like Super Ghosts and Goblins as well. Like, there was so many different versions of Ghosts and Goblins. And the weird thing is, it's pretty much just the same game over and over again. And we're going to get into that when we talk about this game, too.
Yeah. So, Josh, you know, when you talk about the same game over and over, what is the gameplay for Ghosts and Goblins? Like, what is it?
It's a side-scrolling action platformer where you and your girlfriend are hanging out in a graveyard and you're just in your boxes. What are you guys doing? I don't know. And then the devil comes and just steals your girl. And you're like, well, I got to put on my clothes now, I guess. And then there's a zombie invasion.
The beginning of this game, much like Castlevania, is hilarious because like it involves scantily clad men having to save the day. And yeah, this is back in that era where like plot wasn't important. The main character, whose name is Arthur, I don't even know if back in the day you were told his name was Arthur.
He was just the knight.
Just the knight, yeah. You're hanging out with Princess Prin-Prin, that's her name. And she gets kidnapped by some devil man. And yeah, you decide, I gotta go rescue her.
So let me cut you off really quick there, because we keep calling him the devil, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's not his real name, but.
Well, but it is.
Oh, it's just the devil?
Hold on. Because this is coming from the official guide, the instruction manual, right? You ready for this?
So all right.
The final boss of the game is the devil. Right? But who is the boss before him but Satan? So Satan is the boss before him, but the devil is the main boss.
It's needlessly complicated, just like this game is needlessly difficult. I'm just going to get into it right now, Josh. I didn't know any of that information about the final boss because, Josh, I didn't beat this game it is ridiculous. Holy crap. Let's just get into what we've already said three or four times. The difficulty of this game.
Yeah.
As Josh mentioned, with the action-based gameplay, you know, as you run through levels, you're basically throwing projectiles. Sometimes they're straightforward weapons like spears and knives, and other times they're kind of magic-based projectiles. And you have a two-hit barrier between you and death. The first time you get hit, Arthur's knight armor falls off, and then you're just running around your boxers. And then the second time you get hit, you crumble into a pile of bones, and then you have to start over either at the beginning of one of the five levels or at like a halfway checkpoint that you can get to. It sounds pretty straightforward. There's seven levels. I didn't know that, Josh. Again, this game's difficulty is punishing. Now, when did you first play this game?
Am I wrong with that? Yeah, there's seven levels. There's seven levels.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's only three. But here's the thing, Josh. I want to know, when mm-hmm. is the first time that you encountered this game and what platform was it on?
So the first time I played this, I played it on the Sega Genesis. And that was, I believe, Ghouls and Ghosts.
All right, so your first encounter with the franchise wasn't even the original game.
It wasn't the original game, no, but I was aware of the original game because I knew that this was a remake sequel of the game, because I was like, I was always confused. I'm like, well, if this game's Ghosts and Goblins and this game's Ghouls and Ghosts, like, what am I missing something right here?
What
like,
happened to the goblins? Why did they get cut out? I mean,
right,
ghosts get to stick around.
Oh, it was it was Ghouls and Ghosts. That was Ghouls mm-hmm. and Ghosts. Like what? I got really confused with it. But I played it, and it honestly looks the same game. Just it's think of like the Super Mario All-Stars pack, how they went back and they redid all the games that make them look nicer. That's pretty much what it looks like. And you also got extra abilities in that one, too. But that was my first time playing it. And as a 5-6 year old, I that was probably one of the first times I probably ever rage quit, because it is so difficult.
This is stupid. Blah.
I'm gonna go play Mortal Kombat 2 now.
What a 6 year old life you had.
Yeah, oh, it, that was my first time, and I presume this was your first time playing the game, or have you dipped in it before?
I have very unclear memories of maybe playing this with my cousins, because my cousins growing up were the ones who had the game consoles, and I feel like this was in there somewhere, but I would say the first definitive time I was made aware of this game was during X-Play on G4 and previously on Tech TV, because the host, Adam Sessler, quoted this as his favorite game of all time, Ghosts and Goblins. So that's the first time I was ever, like, consciously aware of this game. But playing it this past week for the show is the first time I've really dived into it. And man, Josh, look, I am not trying to come down on anybody who likes a challenging game. I respect that there are people who want to hone their skills and feel really pushed so that when they complete a game, they feel so rewarded. But this is, in my opinion, like a relic, a dinosaur that should be buried underground. It's gameplay, because it represents, you know, an arcade era logic that we are far ahead of. And we're talking in this episode about, does this game need to be remade? I think Ghosts and Goblins need to be remade, and it's, you know, and because it's getting a remake, I want to see the remake address some of my beefs with this game.
So some quality of life differences is what you're talking about.
Big time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I will tell you right now, I have played this game multiple times, mm-hmm. and I've only ever beaten it once. And we can get into what it takes to beat this game. Because, listen, I don't know if you know this, I've played and beat Cuphead. I played and beat the Dark Souls games. I played and beat Battletoads, right? So I am up for a challenge. And
let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question real quick. I know you've completed Battletoads. I Josh, you are the epic gamer moment guy between the two of us, right? I get it. And something I want to ask is that I know you've beaten Battletoads, and you did it for your sideshow on our YouTube channel, Jaeger's Retro Review, which our listeners should check out, because you were trying to review it and just ask how it holds up. And you said in that review that Battletoads is needlessly difficult to the point where it's not enjoyable. And I want to ask you, do you find this game more or less enjoyable than Battletoads?
This is more enjoyable than Battletoads.
Why would you say that?
Battletoads is difficult in a way that's super punishing because they didn't want you to progress. This game wants you to progress, but it has the arcade mentality of constantly wanting to pump quarters into it. That's two different styles of gameplay between those two games. Where this, if you understand what you need to do as you're going through, you can beat this game pretty quick. I've seen gameplay footage of people beating this game in like 18, 20 minutes, in 25 minutes at max. Like, there's ways to do this. There's certain things, and like going back to Castlevania that we talked about on here too, is you need to have certain weapons at certain times of the game because it's going to be beneficial to you.
Okay, that's fair. Well, Josh, why don't you give me and the audience some enlightenment from someone who has completed the game? Tell us, what kind of strategies do you think you have to do to make this game work?
So start off early. You want to get the knife. You want to, because the knife, you throw it fast, you can pretty much kill anything from across the screen, right?
I found the knife to be the best power up. You start with like a spear.
Yep.
Like just a straightforward javelin.
And it's good.
There's also little like fireballs that get thrown in a little bit of an arc above you. And then another item that I found was the shield, which he just chucks out in front of him, and it's a big blocky projectile. But okay. The knife, I will agree, I found that the most useful.
So after the knife, you're going to acquire the fire. The fire might seem useless. However, it kills enemies so fast. I think the red demons, you can kill those in about like 4 or 5 hits. They're pretty easy. Just boom, 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 done. And it kind of stuns enemies a little bit too. But when you get to the end and you get to the very last level, so actually level 6, because level 7 is the final boss fight. you get to level 6, you need to acquire the shield. Because if you don't acquire the shield, you're going to have a bad time. Because you need the shield in order to beat the final boss.
Right. So like CM Punk before us, we needed the shield to enact justice. Got it.
So you need the shield to defeat Azeroth, or the devil, as you could kindly call him. Mm-hmm. After that, you get a screen, Tom, that says this room is just an illusion and a trap devised by Satan. Go ahead dauntlessly, make rapid progress. And it starts you right back at the beginning of the game.
But now it's harder.
But now it's a little bit harder.
A little bit.
A little bit harder. And you have to go through and play through the game again.
Ugh.
And then you do the same exact stuff that you did previously. You get to the very end. You defeat the devil. And you are the winner. You win.
A winner is you, yes.
Speaking of, did you look into any of the translation stuff of this game?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, the final victory screen where you're reunited with Prin, congratulations is spelled quite incorrectly.
Congratulations.
I was going to say, don't read it out loud, Josh, because it might, if taken out of context, it's a little racist what letters are, not Americanized.
And then, what is it? It says something about the happy is filled.
It's like, yeah, you are filled with great vigor to try again. Like,
No. The last screen. So so congratulations is spelled wrong, but then it says, this story is happy end. Thank you.
Yep.
Like,
thank you. Yes.
Boom. Being the wise and courageous knight that you are, you feel willing in your body, return to the starting point, challenge again! !
Poetic.
Every screen that has words on it is horribly translated.
You get mad about Breath of the Wild, where the reward for the Korok seeds is just a piece of Korok poop. I would argue that these ending screens are Korok poop. I went through all that challenge just to get these badly translated graphics saying, hey, good job. Just go play the game again. Like, oh, how dare you?
It's one of those things, though, like you play through it just for like, I did it. One of those. It's an accomplishment to know that you beat Ghosts and Goblins. But it is one of those things, though, when you're done, you're just like, oh, man, like, was it worth it? No. But at the same time, I feel great. I feel great that I accomplished one of the hardest games.
Well, let me go over some things about why it's hard and why I think it's unnecessarily hard, you know? So we've established early that, like, you have two hits and then you're gone. But that's not the only challenge that you're up against. You're up against the fact that enemies spawn very fast and sometimes in very unpredictable patterns.
Right underneath you.
Yeah, and there reaches a point in this game where you basically can only learn about the levels from taking deaths as a punishment and then having to come back through and being like, okay, I remember where I died the last time. And I know that's like a hallmark of gaming, but this one, it can be so nonstop that it can get really frustrating. And to top it all off, each level was on a time limit. Like, this is back to the Super Mario Brothers, Sonic the Hedgehog. What other games? There's been several games we talked about on the show where I've just emphasized that I hate the forced time limits of games like this in the past. Castlevania also. And this game's no different. There was a level where I was trying to navigate around platforms, but because the jumping is so not very precise in this game, you know, Arthur can basically only jump up and down in a vertical kind of just formation. You have to like get a little bit of a run to barely leap up and forward. So as I'm trying to like jump across platforms and everything, all of a sudden I get this dire clock music of like, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, because I'm running out of time. And it's like, holy crap, game, you know, you want me to run through every level, but you have to proceed with caution because of how many enemies and puzzles there are. And I feel like, again, like you said, this is just a relic of the pump you for quarters arcade era. Yeah. Of course you ran out of time, but give me 25 more cents and you can proceed. So I think it's quite bad that these things exist in tandem. And, you know, in terms of my progress, I played this on the Nintendo Switch, on the NES online service that they offer, and the only reason I got as far as I did was because I was using the rewind feature quite a bit. I'm just going to straight up say it. And I mean, it's there for a reason. Yeah. And I got to the end of World 3, which is the cave system, where there's a white dragon. That's a final boss. And I had to quit because no matter how many times I rewound and tried to approach this again, it's like the dragon is unreachable for most projectile attacks that I was trying due to its height. And once it does come down to your level of the screen, you can't outrun it or jump over it because it's faster than you. And it's so long that your pathetic jump can't clear him. So it just became this insurmountable, like, you know, goal where I was like, well, what am I supposed to do besides just accept a death, which will knock me all the way back to the beginning of the game and force me to go again. And I was just kind of like, nah, man. I mean, I could appreciate that, you know, in 1986, if this was the game you got for Christmas, you were gonna put that time into it, you know, you dear gamer, whoever you may be, and I respect that. But you know, in 2021, I got stuff to do. You know,
I gotta play
Demolition All Stars, Josh. I can't deal with this dragon. But so that's my big gripes, is just that the way that the progression is designed and how challenging the enemies are, it makes it so tough that I didn't feel encouraged to try.
Yeah, and that is a product of its time. And I can't go ahead and defend that because it's difficult and it's punishing. Like, if you know the strategic way of going through and beating everything, then yes, like, okay, you can truck this up as being, you know, oh, this is a fantastic game. I don't understand what you guys are talking about. There's problems. There's no problem. There's a lot of problems with this game. And we have to think about it though. Like, this game's 30 plus years old, right? Like, things have changed.
Uh-huh. I think 35 at this point. Well, yeah. 35 later this year.
Right. And is it terrible? No. I don't think a game is terrible because it's difficult. I think a game would be terrible because of poor design, poor gameplay, poor controlling, that kind of stuff. The idea of this game is great. I feel like it is a straight port of the arcade, which could make it very difficult for a lot of people. I would, if this was a Jaeger's Retro Review, I would probably give this like a 2.5 out of 5. Okay. Because there are some great, charming things inside of it. Character design's awesome. I love the little bit of humor that's inside the game too. Like when you get hit and you go down to your underwear, like that is funny. Like it's
goofy fun that, yeah, I do admire in gaming that I feel like we don't dip into as much as a gaming industry, because most AAA stuff is so self-serious that, yeah, the idea of like a hero being knocked down to his skivvies, it's great. I will admit that. Yes.
And I mean, if you think about it, like, this is just like hard mode of Castlevania, really. like it's, but this has goofy features to it, where Castlevania was a very serious game. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Overall, like, I'm fine with the game. I it could be better, and I'm excited to see what the remake's going to bring.
Let's talk about Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection. So it was announced during the 2020 Game Awards. Josh, you and I covered that live. That was a pretty good broadcast. Mm-hmm. And what they're basically advertising is it's a reboot of the series, a kind of reimagining, and it's something of a hybrid between Ghosts and Goblins 85 and Ghouls and Goblins. So
Ghouls and Ghosts.
Ghouls and Ghosts? Okay. So it's mashing these two together, adding new challenges, and also updating its art style to make it look a bit more like a storybook in a way. The art style to me honestly reminds me of like the animated Monty Python segments in a certain way, the way they certain things move. Do you know anything about things that have been added?
No, I don't. I'm gonna go into this blind, I think, a little bit, except for the main trailer.
All right, well, that we saw. But I do know some things. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, you can tell us here. You can tell us here in the podcast.
Okay, so here's two things of note that I saw in the trailer and read about in a press release that I think are interesting and also good things. In the trailer, I noticed that Arthur has the ability to throw items straight up. And I know that sounds like, oh, that's groundbreaking, but it kind of is. Because in the original game, you can only throw straight forward, and then you have to pivot completely behind to throw back in the other direction. So with a lot of aerial enemies that are quite tough, like the little red demon guys, the ability to like get under them and throw like knives up, that could be a game changer.
I think you can do that in Ghouls and Ghosts.
Well, then that's maybe part of what I said they were taking from Ghouls and Ghosts.
Okay.
So combining that mechanic into it. Okay, very cool. But one of the big things I read is that it's going to have multiple difficulty modes for accessibility. And I'm going to run you through them right now. There is Page, which is the easiest difficulty, in which you have infinite lives. Then there is the Squire, where it reduces the enemy encounter numbers, but you don't have infinite lives. It's just like slightly less stressful version.
Yeah.
And then you have the Knight difficulty, which is the third highest. And what this does, it gives Arthur an extra hit. So you can get hit once, then get hit to lose your armor, and then you're dead. So it increases that. And then finally, there is Legend, which is basically the original difficulty of the games.
Okay.
Two hits, limited lives, lots of enemies.
Interesting.
And they said in this release that I read that, you know, it was done because they want newer gamers to not get scared away by the or turned off by the difficulty. They want it to be accessible to a new generation. And I admire that. So I think that's very cool of them.
While we're talking about Ghosts and Goblins and Ghouls and Ghosts and stuff like that, do you know of the third game section of this franchise?
No, Josh, explain that to me.
So, there's a game series that came out. The first one came out on the Game Boy, and then the second one came out on the NES, and it's called Gargoyle's Quest.
Oh, okay.
All right? So, Gargoyle's Quest, which I have here, it's actually a pretty uncommon cartridge for the NES.
Nice.
Follows the life of the Red Demon. And you fly around and you get little power-ups and you level up and stuff like that. I've never really dove into it much, but I do have the first one on the Game Boy, which my Game Boy games are on the other side of my room. And I have Gargoyle's Quest 2 here. But yeah, that's an offshoot, pretty much a spinoff of the Ghosts and Goblins games.
So basically what you're saying is it's the equivalent of if in the middle of the Super Mario Brothers trilogy, they were just like, we're going to make an RPG about Goombas. And well, this, you know, the adventure of a spunky little Goomba who's just trying to make it in the world or something.
Yeah, I mean, or like, you know, X-Men Origins Magneto, the movie that we never got.
Oh, I'm so glad we didn't get that movie. I cannot imagine. Like, look, de-aging CGI has still not hit a good enough point. But in 2008, they wanted to digitally de-age Ian McKellen to play a young version of himself. And I was like, no, bad idea.
Ghosts and Goblins has had a really long history, and I'm surprised it is still kicking, and I'm surprised that Capcom is supporting this franchise over other franchises like Dino Crisis for remakes. Uh-huh. Now, they have been on a very good high when it comes to their remakes right now. Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3, Monster Hunter is getting revamped since World hit. You know, I mean, they've kind of spun the wheels in the right direction now. Maybe Ghosts and Goblins is the next way to go. And then they keep seeing like, oh, man, like we got a good thing going here. Let's just keep bringing back these older games and getting better and making them better.
But it's possible.
And that's one thing you've always talked about is about game preservation, right?
Yes. I would love it. For the sake of that, if Resurrection included, like, as a bonus, play the original version of the game.
I think it'll be really hidden somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be really cool to pack in there. But, you know, it's this fine line for me in this episode, particularly, but about, you know, preserving gaming history, but also acknowledging that we've come a long way in terms of accessibility. And I'm not saying that, like, every game needs to be handheld, easy, you know, like, you know, there's this kind of
baby ass negative baby mode.
Yeah, there's this negative attitude towards the kind of notion that, like, oh, you're not good enough to play the game. And it's just like, it's got nothing to do with not being good enough. It's just like, video games are supposed to be enjoyable and challenging. And for me, this one was just challenging. And yep. I can only imagine some other gamers might have had that problem. So yeah. I hope this new remake strikes a balance, because I think Ghosts and Goblins is this, like, you know, the kind of goofy, silly, cool on its margins. Just to make the game more playable.
Me and Tom both agree that Ghosts and Goblins needs to be remade. Absolutely. And we are both excited for the release of Ghosts and Goblins Resurrected. Is it Resurrected?
It's Resurrection.
Oh. Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection. But until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.